Welcome to Serves You Right. This is Andrew, and I'm glad you can make it. If you are a server, a bartender, back of house warrior, this is the spot for you. Follow me as we try to work out and solve one fundamental question: whether or not you can truly be happy working in the restaurant industry. With everything involved in working in service, the alcohol, the late nights, low wages, angry guests, restaurants and bars offer a very strange blend of challenge and opportunity, let's say. They do also serve a very large and underserved population in the U.S. So I'm trying to answer these questions. Are they flawed and ugly in some ways? Well, yeah, but the service industry also does serve a deep and fundamental need. That drive for a fast, flexible work environment, the thrill of quick money, and, let's be honest, the appeal of the slightly dangerous for some. Again, my name's Andrew, and I've worked in restaurants for about 20 years. I've done everything from dishwashing all the way to being a general manager, and a little bit of everything in between. So this is my record of what I've learned and what's interesting to me. Follow along and see what we make of it all. Thanks for listening. Let's do it. Today, we are talking to Jasmine Parks Papadopoulos. Jasmine joins us from CHOW, Culinary Hospitality Outreach and Wellness. So this was a very powerful conversation I was extremely happy to have. Jasmine's background is in the back of house. She does not shy away from telling us about her experiences in asking about mental health and the lukewarm at best reception that got. I was extremely touched by their temperature check. The how are you feeling on a scale of rare to well done. I definitely think I am going to use that in the future. And we get to talk about the significance of May for their organization, industry challenges, the goals and growth of CHOW, and definitely just a powerful episode where we really, really get into it. So I hope this serves you, and thank you for listening to Serves You Right.
How did you end up, you know, joining CHOW, and how did all that happen?
Yeah, I joined CHOW as a meeting attendee. I had actually heard about CHOW when I was still in the industry. I was the head of food and beverage and executive chef for a pretty high profile hotel group in Colorado. And I had made it about halfway through the pandemic, still working. A lot of the folks that I was managing were in the process of being furloughed. And right at that point, you know, where that human struggle was really becoming, hey, this isn't going to be a couple of weeks, but this might be long term. I started looking for resources to be able to support my staff. And I came across CHOW, which at the time was just a very small grassroots support meeting in Denver, Colorado. And I asked the GM of the property that I was working for, I said, you know, there's this group called CHOW and they support mental health for food, beverage, hospitality workers. They do this thing called a temperature take where, you know, when folks clock in at the beginning of their shift, they ask how the staff is doing on a scale of rare to well done. And the GM said, okay, you're going to open up that can of worms and you're going to do what about it? So you get a bunch of well dones. What are you going to do? Are you going to send them home? We still have a shift to get through. You're not a therapist. I don't see the benefit of bringing this resource. You're going to open up a can of worms that, you know, we can't even fathom the consequences of. Just drop it. And I did happily. I dropped it happily. It was, I am very candid about my experience in the food, beverage, hospitality industry. I was not a very motivating, supportive, or open-minded chef. I mentored very much the way that I was mentored, which was coming up in fine dining in Europe. There was a lot of aggression and violence there. And so, you know, I dropped it and then I left the industry and I didn't know how to take care of myself in any capacity. I had had no work-life balance. I had no hobbies. I had no friendships that weren't the trauma bonds from the industry. I hadn't done a lot of, you know, personal development in the years that I had been a chef. And so I pursued a coaching certification because I wanted to learn how to take care of myself, right? Like, what are the basics? How long does a person have to sleep to feel human? What does it look like to eat a meal that is not cold? And so a couple of months into that, I reached out to the organization and I said, do you need any volunteers? Is there, can I, you know, offer some coaching for the support groups that you all are running? And the volunteer that I had reached out to, who is now Chow's CEO, Aaron Boyle, that's how long we've been working together, said, yeah, come to a meeting and check it out. And I thought to myself, I don't want to go to this meeting. I just want to be able to give back to the community. I'm not trying to sit in a support group, trying to talk to people. And then three meetings in, I was absolutely hooked. It was incredibly powerful, even though I had been going to therapy at the time, because I recognized that I needed a lot of support to integrate into life. There was a lot of background context that I had to explain to a traditional therapist, right? There was a lot of, well, boundaries in the industry look like this. So it's not like, you know, I
got one Saturday off last month. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Or, you know, gosh, even being able to celebrate holidays for the first time in however many years and not knowing, you know, what to do with myself outside of that. Not to mention so much of my identity, right, as a chef was wrapped up in my profession. And so I walked into a Chow meeting and everybody was like, yeah, we get it, been there. And so I started off as a meeting attendee. And then slowly, as the organization started to grow, during the pandemic, you know, a lot of our programming became hybrid. So you can now access those support groups from anywhere in the world. And then there was a need for education. So we developed educational courses. And then after that, it was like, how do we resource broker for folks who might not know how to get connected to relevant organizations? And so it grew so quickly. And there was more of an internal need for support. And I've now been with Chow almost since the very beginning, about 5 years. I think about three or four of those have been full-time in a non-volunteer capacity.
Oh, that's awesome. you know, hearing you talk through all that, it made me wonder, is it something to do with the hospitality industry itself? On this podcast, I've talked to a chef now, distributor, a couple of servers, bartenders mostly, because that's my main background before I got management. And every one of them, there's some tale of working long hours, drinking too much, having too much fun or not enough fun, or some combination of all those things. And is it the nature of the beast, or?
I love that question. It is the hospitality. What came first, the chicken or the egg? There's a great chef, Patrick Mulmady, who heads up an organization called I Got Your Back out of California, who asks the very impactful question, did folks come to the industry broken, or did we break them when they got here? My personal experience is that I'm a third generation chef. My father is a chef. My father parents exactly the way he chefs, very aggressively, very loudly. And so to me, the dysfunction that I played an active participation role in the industry was very similar to the dysfunction that I experienced in my family of origin. For a very long time, I had to, I've had these conversations on a personal level with so many folks that worked in the industry, where the chaos is something incredibly recognizable to you if you grow up a certain way, right? The dysregulation of the noise, the really up and down kind of fluctuating paces, the havoc that it wreaks on your nervous system. It can feel comfortable for folks who grew up in dysfunctional environments. And that was certainly my experience. And it was true for me. There was a lot of what I was looking for and what I experienced as mentorship and support was essentially, you know, some kind of verbal abuse. and as a person who had received so much of it, I was then able to really step into the role of the aggressor as a leader. I don't, you know, a lot of the amends that I make still years out of the industry is how damaging I was to the people that I worked with, because that was all I knew. To me, mentorship, I care about you, means I yell at you, I use fear to make you submit. I use volume to make you stop what you are doing or to redirect you. And so, you know, I've heard from a lot of folks that that dysfunction is incredibly familiar, that that pace that messes with your nervous system can be really, really comfortable when you've grown up in chaos.
Yeah. No, I mean, that actually rings very true. I haven't really thought of it that way, but when I, because, you know, before I got into restaurants, I worked at like a movie theater, you know, sort of servicey jobs, but when I started serving was when I kind of felt at home. And I that chaos, I think some people hate it or thrive in it. And I was really thriving in it, as I thought. And then 20 years later, you look back and you're like, oh, that was a lot. That was a lot.
Absolutely. You know, shout out to Chef Greg Baker, who talks about the quiet hour. And, you know, you had asked how what kind of a role does this play? You know, Chef Greg Baker talks about how when we work in these, in this marginalized pace where we work the hours where the world is active and operational. And then, you know, he says the restaurant, quote unquote, spits you out at 1 a.m. in the middle of the street where everyone you know and love is already asleep. And the only thing that's open is the neighborhood dive bar. And you somehow have to find a way to come off of the incredible adrenaline surge of the service that you got through. You know, you haven't eaten, you haven't slept, and you know that there's, you know, nowhere for you to go except to go have a couple of drinks and wind down. And at what point does that then become the noose around your neck, right?
Mm-hmm. No, no. I mean, I grew up in Santa Fe. Well, I grew up in Texas, but spent most of my professional career in Santa Fe. And there's a dive bar there, the Matador, and they can tell you they saw me most nights. So.
Very real, very relatable for most industry folks, for sure.
For sure. I did want to, you know, one of my notes going through some of the stuff that you all did, who came up with the rare to well done in describing emotional like temperature? Because I think that's genius.
It's wonderful. We love food specific. In fact, Chow believes that the community care that is going to create a sustainable workforce for food, beverage, hospitality workers is going to come with vocationally specific tools. So instead of using things that are really polarizing that we have to learn from scratch, we can borrow the skill set, these soft skills that as hospitality workers we already have to be able to ultimately serve ourselves. And so the very first meeting that took place, our founder, John Hinman, who is still very an active hospitality member in the Denver food beverage hospitality industry. He's the owner and operator of Hinman Pies. So he had worked in food beverage hospitality and then, you know, started his recovery journey and then returned to the industry. And he saw a lot of those things that had influenced his substance misuse. He saw them still present in the industry. And so his goal became to talk about the pain that we can't see, is what he calls it. You know, his question was, if we as hospitality workers get hurt on the job, and instead of stepping off the line and, you know, we don't go to the urgent care to get stitches, we just glue it so that we could get through the shift. So if we are having such a challenging time addressing physical pain and sitting with physical pain, how challenging is it for us to even talk about that hurt that never even shows up? And so he invites a bunch of folks over to his bakery. He says, you know, we're going to talk about the pain that we can't see. And this meeting should have probably been just a couple of people, you know, getting together and having a chat. And as it were, Anthony Bourdain completed suicide just a couple of days before that. So it ended up being a full room of people. And he didn't know how to start this conversation. And so he said, you know, here's what I know about all of us is that we have so many descriptors for our food, both front of the house that has to sell that marbled, juicy, tender steak, as well as the chef. We have more words for food than we have for our feelings. So what if I make each temperature correspond with a set of feelings? And for folks who are listening who can't picture it visually, we actually, at the beginning of all of our chow discussion meetings, we put up a thermometer. And with that thermometer is every single temperature from rare to well done. And each temperature has five words under it that are, you know, frustrated, amused, stressed, anxious, so that you can kind of start to correlate these human feelings with descriptors that you might already have in your back pocket because of your job.
Yeah, definitely want to be more on the rare side. from looking at it, but no, but there's so many days out walking to work, and if I could just tell people I'm feeling a little medium well today, like that would help a lot when you kind of just internalize and keep it quiet. But
Absolutely. And, that was a really great learning opportunity for me when I came to Chow. I had this big question, like, what is the point of asking? Because that's what I left the industry with, right? Like, why are you going to ask these people if there's nothing you can do about it? Folks are going to check in at a well done. It's not like you can send them home. We're understaffed. We're trying to get through service. And that was my big question when I came to Chow. What is the point of asking people how they're doing if I can't do anything about it? And what I've learned in the last few years is that wanting to do something about it and to fix it is a way to try to control the narrative. Folks don't often share about how they're feeling because they expect you to fix every part of it. They just want to be seen and heard, and they want to know that there's room for their personhood, that they don't have to continue to check stuff at the door so that they could plaster a smile on their face and, focus on the interaction at the dinner table. And so yeah, there's this I recently went and I spoke at a conference where I modeled the temperature take in a room full of people, and I checked in at a medium well. I said I was medium well because and well done is I've been on the grill for far too long. Juicy is rare. Rare is juicy, full of life. And so I checked in at a mid well, and I said, because I'm really excited to be here and I want to be in my body because I love this conversation, but my shoes hurt so much right now that it makes it hard for me to think of anything outside it. And I asked everybody who attended, did you feel moved to take your shoes off and give them to me? Did you feel like I wasn't valuable in the skills that I was teaching you simply because my feet hurt? And they were all like, no, why? And I'm like, well, there you go. That's why we can sit with a well done or a medium well, because we all are inherently valuable even when we show up at a well done. In fact, we're probably giving permission for someone else to be like, I'm also at a mid well. Thanks for saying that, because now I can get a vent out and, really feel like myself and go out and get the job done.
Yeah. No, and there's a value in just being able to say it out loud,
Sure.
because you hold on to all this stuff, and yeah, that's no good. So I wanted to kind of ask you if it's okay too. So let's say I was interested in going to one of these meetings. Like, how would I go about that?
So our meetings are hybrid, which means that they have physical locations and they are also online. So you would visit www.chowco.org. And you would click on our meeting calendar. Our meeting calendar will tell you what times we're meeting. These times and dates don't ever change. Okay. So we do that so that folks can, depend on a certain meeting, consider it their home group. So they never change. We have dedicated spaces for women and for men. And we are rolling out within the next quarter our Spanish speaking meeting and our LGBTQ plus meeting. And so what you would do is you would visit the calendar, you look at a time frame that best matches your availability, you click on it, and it would give you a physical address or a Zoom room, and you can join us in either capacity. And then what ends up happening is that if you're in a Zoom room, you can keep your camera off. You can use an alias. If you're feeling like you want to protect your identity and you are not very confident just yet showing up and being forward facing, so you can use an alias. You can keep your camera off. You can share in the chat. And what it looks like is every single meeting starts off with an icebreaker, just so that we can get to know ourselves and each other. It's a really brief exercise. Then we launch into the temperature take, which is, on a scale of rare to well done. And then every meeting has a topic. The meeting is moderated by someone that we call an expose. So much like in a restaurant, right, is facilitating the conversation between the front of the house and the back of the house, which can introduce resources if they are requested. So if somebody shows up and they just want to vent about, or they want a safe place to share, for example, share about intimate partner violence, they are well within their rights to do that. And then they can stay on for an additional half hour after the meeting and say, I need some resources for folks who are experiencing intimate partner violence. And the expose is trained to sit with them, get them to the right organization, spend time with them while they're filling out forms or doing the research, and then checks in with them afterwards to see what progress they're making. And then, so there's a topic or a theme to discuss that typically comes as a result. Our expos are expertly trained folks who, for example, if you have a room with a bunch of folks who are checking in at a well done, one, because they haven't had one person is sharing, they haven't had a day off, and another one because, you know, they're experiencing a breakup, and another one is experiencing a friendship breakup, they can kind of like find a warm, common theme between all of them. And they might say, today, let's talk about insecurities or lack of boundaries, and we'll ask thoughtful, open-ended questions to get a conversation started. The meetings typically last about an hour. You can drop your email in the chat if you want somebody to check in with you after the meeting, or you can leave it in person if the meeting is happening in person. And that's kind of what a chow meeting looks like.
That's cool. Yeah. And it wasn't quite clear on the website. Is that the same as the Amuse, or is that something different?
It's something different. So we actually, after doing the meetings for a couple of years, we had folks asking us really great questions. Like, hey, you know, have you, for example, you know, it's really bothersome that we use language like chef is really OCD about his knife roll, because OCD is an actual diagnosis. And it kind of feels icky that we use language like that. And we're like, yeah, that's actually a really, really good point. Also, have you, you know, so many folks that I work with in the industry who are absolute rock stars are folks, for example, who are neurodivergent and might have ADHD because they're phenomenal at hyper-focus and like managing multiple things at the same time. So we started to wonder, like, what is the connection? How does mental health show up specifically in our industry? How does recovery from substance misuse show up in our industry? And what are the kind of skills that we can give to folks so that they can recognize all of these things and the way that these issues affect workplace wellness, and then give them resources so they can support themselves and each other? And so we came up with a 4-hour course. And the 4-hour course is our Amuse Mental Health course, which is offered multiple times, about 3 times a month. It is completely free. You purchase a $15 placeholder, which is returned to you on the day that you show up for your training. And you show up and you take a 4-hour course, which is accredited now, and you learn all about how mental health and recovery show up in the food, beverage, hospitality industry, as well as about assertive communication and what we call the 8 ingredients of wellness, and how that intersectionality can create a culture of wellness.
Okay. So Amuse 4-hour course, the meetings are about 1 hour, if I understand. Yeah. Meetings, do they cost or?
No, they're completely free.
Oh, that's great too. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess you really just need to pay the placeholder and then that gets returned to you. And sure.
That's right. And that's only for the Amuse Mental Health course. The meetings are completely free. We are very fortunate. We work, we get donations from government funding. We receive government funding, and we work with donors as well who are able to, you know, donate funds so that we can keep all of our programming free of cost, in recognition of the fact that for food, beverage, hospitality workers, which are often underpaid and underinsured, it can be incredibly challenging to go to therapy. And honestly, there's a staggering statistic that the food, beverage, hospitality industry is so big and growing at such a fast rate that currently, if every clinical mental health care provider were to fill up their docket completely with food, beverage, hospitality workers, we would actually outnumber them 29 times over. Yeah. And so Chow is born out of a need. That's why we say Chow is us helping us. So being able to sit shoulder to shoulder with folks and share about the things that we know and have been through, so that, you know, my experiences roadmap, it's probably not going to align with yours, right? We've already identified a key difference between front of the house and back of the house, for example, but you and I can definitely relate on lack of boundaries, not ever having had a Saturday off, right?
Oh yeah.
We can have a conversation together. We can support each other, even though our life experience is just a little bit different, because we've all experienced the same vocationally specific challenges.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's really, really cool. How many people do you think come through Chow every year? Or do you have statistics on how many people you end up helping month by month? Or
yeah, we do. Like that? We do. We are honing in on systems to trace our impact. 2025, I think, is going to be the year that we get those systems down completely. I think last year We reached about 16,000 people. We have an awesome infographic up on our website for every single year that we've been operational that tallies up. On average, we give about 300 training hours a month. We have between 200 and 400 meeting hours. 300 training hours a year, and between 200 and 400 meeting hours a year as well. Our goal is to get to 20,000 people in 2025. And I think the coolest number that we found so far is that we have a 90%, I think this month we're at 90%, a 90% return rate. So if folks who attend a Chow meeting, 90% of them come back to attend a second Chow meeting, which is very, very cool for us.
That is awesome. Yeah. So, wow. 16,000 people. It was 16,000 or 100,000. Wow. I said it and I was like, that's a big number.
It's a big number. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about this beforehand, but I definitely want to talk after this because I'd like to share the link with our restaurant group. So see if some of the people in my restaurant group need help, that sort of thing. So
I would love that. And I, you know, anyone who's listening too, I would encourage you. We have really cool materials, outreach materials. We have a poster that talks about Chow's mission and a super easy to scan QR code that takes you directly to a meeting. And we can ship those out to anyone who's interested. We encourage folks, we'll ship it to you for free, put it up on a communication board, share it with the groups that you work for or you work with, or that you're an owner and operator for. It's a great, great free resource for folks to take advantage of, and folks can't take advantage of it if they don't know, you know, that it exists.
For sure. Yeah. A couple other things I wanted to ask you about. I saw on the site there's a statistic that for every dollar spent in mental health, it was a return of four. I was wondering where that number came from, or how you calculate that.
Yeah, so we are very big on collaboration. So we have partner organizations, and this was actually very baffling to me coming from the industry. In the very first year that I worked at Chow, I was like, don't let anybody take our research. We should trademark our education. And Aaron Boyle, our CEO, was like, hey, collaboration, not competition. Everybody, you know, the more people know about all the programs, that is success. That is the sustainable workforce. And so we work with partner organizations like Seven Shifts, for example. Seven Shifts works primarily with POS systems. And what they do is they collate data based on what employees are reporting, what owners and operators are reporting. And so we also work with all of the other wellness organizations for food, beverage, hospitality workers like CHAD and Not 9 to 5, Restaurant After Hours, Southern Smoke, which does financial assistance. We actually, Chow belongs to what we call the MORE Coalition, which is all of the organizations set to support food, beverage, hospitality workers in some way or another, right? Through financial, mental health, any kind of assistance. We follow a full spectrum in this coalition. And so we all share information between us. And then we coupled it with something that we called listening tours and think tanks. So we toured the state of Colorado and we conducted anonymous surveys with staff members. And then we took that information and talked to the owners and operators to see what was working and what wasn't. And if that information that had been reported actually resonated with them, if they were aware. And so a lot of those numbers that we put together, including the ones shared by partners, which is that every dollar invested in mental health yields a $4 investment return, is because all of the cultural shifts that folks have started to invest in, and I'll give you a very practical one, for example, we've had restaurants share with us that when they were able to tally up how much they were spending in shift drinks, they were able to actually come up with a comprehensive budget that the restaurant voted on what they wanted to invest it in. And in one example that I can think of, they actually got a wellness allotment per month. Instead of getting that shift drink, like let's do a pizza party with the money that we would have spent on a shift drink, the employees voted that they wanted a wellness allotment. And so everybody got X amount of money per month to be able to pay for their yoga subscription, or to be able to pay for their gym membership, or to be able to pay. And they noticed that their turnover, nobody was leaving, right? In a place where we are most often treated that is the I think that's what we're hearing, where the number comes from, is that in a place where we are all just kind of treated like hustle workers, right? There's this understanding, erroneous understanding, that most folks who work in hospitality, they're just college students who are taking a couple of shifts until they end up where they're supposed to end up in their career. But I can tell you from personal experience, I worked with plenty of people who took this very seriously as their career. This was the place. And it can be very hard for folks like that to feel like a business is investing in them professionally, because it's like, okay, well, you're a chef. You're going to be a chef for as long as you stay here until you go chef somewhere else. And so it is very rare and very new and innovative. And we're seeing this, a vast increase of it, of owners and operators who are saying, great, okay, so I'm going to invest in an EAP for my employees so that they have financial assistance, so that this chef can, you know, get a 401k and she can get, you know, coaching so that she can come up with a reserve so that she can take her dream vacation every year, right? And so this is the cultural shift that we are hoping to see. We're trying to push for personal and professional development that is going to absolutely yield a great return of investment, because folks end up staying for longer. They end up staying happier. They end up staying healthier. They end up referring their friends to bring them to the business. And everybody thrives, right?
No, that's awesome. Yeah. That's super cool. Yeah. I mean, turnover alone, that'll eat you alive in training costs and
onboarding. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. If nothing else, in the time wasted in filling out the paperwork every time.
Of course, yeah. And, you know, for those of you listening who don't know, it is, wow, so much paperwork in the food, beverage, hospitality industry.
I did want to ask you, too, I think it was the green rooms. Mm-hmm. Is what I saw. What are those? Because I wasn't sure if I understood the concept, but it seemed cool.
It is. I mean, we're new to them. 2024 was the year that we launched them, and we're perfecting them in 2025. So we started hearing from folks. We're a listening organization, right? So folks typically come to us and they're like, have you considered this? And we're like, huh, okay. Walk me through that. What does that mean? And so we started hearing from folks that so much of what folks who are not in the food, beverage, hospitality industry experience as fun is like, you know, a conference, a festival, a food festival. This is like, you know, in Colorado, for example, come spring season, it's food festival season, right? So you are going to go somewhere and you are going to enjoy a variety of foods that are being, there's one in Colorado Springs that is phenomenal. And you get all of the best restaurants that are, you know, you pay for an entry ticket and you go around and you get all of the little tidbits and stuff. And so for most people, these cool events that they go to are put on and worked at by food, beverage, hospitality workers who are exhausted and who often don't get to experience that themselves. And so we started actually setting up green rooms at these conferences, food festivals, anywhere where there's hospitality workers working for hours to frame an experience for folks to come and enjoy food at a venue. We will go set up a green room. And what that looks like is we have NA partners who come out and they make mocktails. And then we have massagers that you can sit in. We have leg massagers, head massagers, shoulder massagers, and we set up in an area. And so folks either before they start, you know, the food festival, for example, or the conference, or after they finish, we run the green room for the duration of the festival, so that whenever folks are getting breaks, they can literally come get a massage. They can come grab a protein bar. They drink some water. They have a mocktail. They have a conversation with somebody at Chow that can check in with them. And then they go right back to the stand. So the green rooms are essentially a way to treat the rock stars like rock stars, and give them a little bit of space and a little bit of self-preservation and self-service in those experiences where they are typically the memory makers, the folks who are foundationally working an event so that everyone else can enjoy it, and giving them the space to be able to invest in their wellness and just chill for a second and experience that rock star treatment before going right back to it.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I've worked several of those. Have you ever heard Wine and Chili in Santa Fe?
I have not, no.
It's a huge festival. It's exactly what you're talking about, but
Yeah.
yeah. If you you work all day, you barely eat, you serve 1,000 people and you
Yep.
go get drunk afterwards. So,
Exactly.
yeah. So.
Yeah, for most of I mean for me it was like large scale catering events were like that. It was like a blur. You'd wake up the next day, your whole body was hurting, and then you had to like clock into work and you were like, what? And I love that affirmation. That's what we hear from folks a lot. I wish this had been available when I was doing XYZ, right? That's how we know our temperature gauge is landing in the appropriate place, and we're being supportive in the most healthful and relevant way, right?
I did want to ask you too, how much do you think this organization came from COVID and the reaction to COVID? Because I feel like that changed the dialogue a lot.
That's a great question. Well, I think personally we benefited from COVID. I think the reason why we quote unquote blew up like this was because, we started out of Denver. And so it was sure that first meeting was 32 people in John Hinman's bakery. But what ended up happening is that COVID happened a few weeks after that. And so then folks were referring people outside of the state of Colorado, and all of a sudden, like you were logging into a room and there were people in Portugal and in Australia and in Canada, and you were like, what? And so being able to take all of our programming online was a massive benefit to us because we now consider ourselves an international nonprofit. Our attendees are from everywhere in the world. Our rooms are so mixed. So it was a benefit for us. My personal opinion is that the pandemic uncovered a lot of existing blind spots. I think these things had been historically happening in the food, beverage, hospitality industry. People didn't have their phone in their hands as much as what I think, because there's so much of what we call mask aisle abuse now, right? Which is the abuse that folks who worked through the pandemic were receiving from patrons who refused to wear a mask when they were going into, their establishment and had to. And there were folks who were taping, right? So throughout the pandemic, if your experience was anything like mine, every other week there was a viral video of somebody losing their mind in an establishment saying, "You will not tell me what to do with my body. I will not wear a mask. I want to pick up this." The new part was these videos going viral at the frequency that they were going viral for me. But in truth, even though my experience with front of the house was very, very brief in my beginning before I landed in back of the house, that had always been true. Folks had kind of always acted a little bit abusive and entitled. And we just didn't, we weren't at home watching behind our phones. And so what I think is that. And we've heard a lot from folks that, folks in the food, beverage, hospitality industry, they got unemployment and now nobody wants to work. Well, it is my personal opinion, that if folks are finally making a fair and dignified wage on unemployment for the first time in their lives, even though they've been working in a certain career field for 15, 16, 10 years, that means that blind spot was there before. Folks have been historically underpaid. And it wasn't until the pandemic that folks were like, hey, I work with my body in a kitchen that keeps me overheating for hours. I haven't eaten, I haven't sat down, and I can make more money on unemployment at home. Something's wrong with this picture, right? And so to me, the pandemic uncovered the fact that we had been historically marginalized and largely invisible, I think. It's been a process of being treated or being asked to be essential workers, which we have been, I think, all along, and not compensated as such, which then became glaring during the pandemic.
Sure. And I was also kind of thinking about it in terms of this, the ratio of people willing to work to spots that are open. And, a lot of the ownership and management, it's easy to ignore problems when you have three other people who are ready to start tomorrow. But when people aren't coming in to apply, all of a sudden that balance of power does start shifting to where, oh, we need to take care of these people. We need to, really take the mental health and wellness of my staff to heart. because
Absolutely.
no one will show up otherwise.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, we have this, it's very funny. When I came to the United States and I started working here, I started hearing the term the band of misfit toys, which is, you know, a phrase that folks regularly use to describe people who work back of the house. And it wasn't until I came to Chow that I was like, what an intentional derogatory term that I have at times used about myself. Because if I believe that I am just a member of a band of misfit toys, I'm not really standing up to my full boundary to say I deserve healthcare, I deserve fair hours, I deserve fair compensation. And so there's so many different small ways in which culturally and historically we've minimized the contributions of food, beverage, hospitality workers. And you're hitting on a great point here. It used to be up until recently that if you left, you got into a verbal fight with your manager and you left at midnight, you know, by 11 o'clock the next day, you could have filled out an application somewhere else and you'd be employed, right? And that is changing too. So the investment of employees into a business and the investment of the business in employees as well, which we hope leads to what we call the sustainable workforce, right? Where it's mutually beneficial. We celebrate personhood and the contributions of every person who's a part of the industry, instead of saying, I don't care who you are, as long as you clock in, put a smile on your face and get this done, right?
Yeah, for sure. So what does Chow have coming up? What are you excited about? Or
gosh, so,
so many things. Yeah.
So many things. So many things. Well, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And that is a really big month for us. We do this really cool project where we put together all of our resources, invitations for all of our programming. We, you know, put through all of the descriptions for every single thing that we offer. We put together a bunch of merch. We put it in a binder and we send it to businesses so that they can find out about Chow and what we do. May is also our For a Cause Partnership Month, and it's where businesses that we've partnered with in the past, that we go out and we do pre-shifts in the community. They're either virtually or in person. We go and we sit with a team for 20 to 30 minutes and walk them through all of the Chow programming, walk them through the temperature take, when is an appropriate time to do it with your team. So we do our pre-shifts, and typically folks who have worked with us in some capacity in the past are really passionate about supporting financially to make sure that our programming remains free of cost. And so we do our For a Cause partnerships, where there's businesses that will support Chow in the month of May and say, we are going to be selling mocktails, for example, and donating the proceeds of those mocktails. Or we want to have a mental health centered event, and we're going to be donating the proceeds to Chow. So May is an incredibly busy month for us because it is a very warm touch point in the community. It's where most folks come to us and they're like, okay, walk us through a mental health conversation and how can we help? And so it's a big month of partnership and collaboration. And then shortly after that, we are launching our Spanish speaking and LGBTQ plus meeting. So it is going to be a very fruitful and busy few months for us at Chow. Oh, and then recovery month in September, which is huge for us as well.
Awesome. Awesome. You've got a lot to do, it sounds like.
Yes. And, you know, I tell folks this all the time, but I'm only half joking. I have a daughter who's 10 who thinks she might be a chef when she grows up. So I've got about 8 years to fix the industry. Before, you know, she integrates. So, you know, I'm rolling up my sleeves and really hoping that sustainable workforce works at a really good pace to welcome her when she's of age.
That's awesome. People that are interested in your projects and your goals, where should they follow you, or where can they find out more?
Yeah, so we are most active on Instagram and Facebook, and I would encourage everybody to check out our blog. We have a wellness blog where we just put together a whole bunch of free opportunities that even other organizations are doing. So you can like visit our website, that's chowco.org, on a Monday, and we'll have provided you with a summary of really cool free stuff for food, beverage, hospitality workers from other organizations as well, and what everyone is working on. So our website, and then we are active on TikTok as well, and you can find us on LinkedIn. We are present on all social media platforms except the strangely political ones.
Fair enough. well, perfect. And Jasmine, thank you. I don't think I introduced you at the beginning because we were so excited to just start talking. If you're listening, all those links to all the social will be at the show notes. Thank you again for everything you're doing and taking the time. And I'm really excited. And hopefully we can work together too.
Absolutely. And thank you, and to everyone that's listening, and to you as well. When I first started doing this kind of work, our outreach work, there were so many closed doors at the beginning. Folks were like, "I don't know what you're talking about. We don't have a problem." So it is such a privilege, truly a privilege of the work that we are doing, and a part of my job that I love so very much, when folks are able to reach out and give us the platform to talk about the work that we're doing. It's collaborations and conversations like this that I truly believe are normalizing, right? Being able to talk about mental health and being able to exchange a little bit of our stories. And so I'm incredibly grateful to be here today, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk about our mission that's super important to us.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Thank you for taking the time to listen today. If you enjoyed this, please leave a review, like, even just one moment to hit that like button does really help people find the show. Everyone who listens, thank you. You are my people. Keep rocking on. Have a great service, and please come back to check us out. We send out every episodes Tuesday, and starting soon, Thursday. Rock on. Cheers.